Welcome to Goodniks, a podcast about doing good in the world. Together, we dig into the experiences of people who do good in very different ways to understand what inspires them, what frustrates them, and what keeps them going. I'm Annalisa Enrile, a social worker, professor, and human rights activist. Whether you're doing good yourself or just thinking about it, I'm glad you're here. In our last episode, we heard about the limits our Goodniks come up against as they do good in the world. We discovered that making peace with those limits isn't possible for most of our Goodniks, but that they carry on all the same because there is always more good to do. In this episode, we reverse course and ask our Goodniks what went really right as they were doing good in the world. Were there signs along the way that they were on the right path? And where did they find the validation that they needed to keep going?
Culture was everything to me. I grew up in a way where, in a time when school was in black and white, and everything that was happening outside of school was in technicolor. In school, I was being offered plus and minus, multiplication and division. Out of school, I was given the Beastie Boys. Out of school, I was given Christian Assoy skateboarding. In school, I was given red pens and detentions. Out of school, I was given secret handshakes and clothing with zippers on the legs and overalls. One strap up, one strap down. Don't go looking for pictures. It was dynamic and fun and colorful and exciting.
Yossi uses arts and culture to organize people in politics or for social change.
And I, for some reason, unlike some of my peers, was able to code switch and move around inside of subcultures, from hip hop to punk to Dungeons and Dragons nerdiness to punk rock. I was able to, with ease, relate to others, and I fell in love with it. And as somebody who didn't take to learning inside the traditional school environment, I absorbed so much information outside of it. And to me, they were equal in value. And I saw the power and I saw the immensity of the cultural language and the cultural lexicon and the cultural environment. And it swallowed me in, and I jumped in head first because I loved it. And I continue to. It is not surprising to me that I ended up here because it's how I did it back then. It's literally how I, in my brain, understood that the punk rock kids were setting boundaries of who in and who was out based on the size of their pant ankle, the cuff, and that the hip hop heads would sit in this part of campus and that the skaters wouldn't show up to school on these days. And I began the categorization and the understanding that people had different perspectives on the world from then. And it has carried through to today, and it remains as true today as it did back then. And that ability to see it is why I became it and what I leaned into and how I ended up doing what I do. There was a clear moment for me. And in fact, it was the first meeting that I had with, at that point, Senator Barack Obama's team. And they said, hey, would you like to come and work with us to help get Barack Obama the nomination and then potentially the win for president of the United States and on the communications team? And I said, yeah, at the time I was working in communications or the field formerly known as public relations. And they said, great, and I was like, but I have no idea what that means. Like, I've been working in like culture and I didn't really understand politics and the context in which win is produced. And they said, we're going to need like the Sacramento Bee's editorial board endorsement, and we're going to need the Long Beach Gazette. And like, I I didn't read any of those things, and I actually didn't know anybody who did. And in the landscape of media and of care and enthusiasm and in big new ideas, none of those were relevant to me or my peers. And I immediately knew in that moment that what I did was different and I need to do what I know how to do. And again, I didn't have words for it yet. What I knew was that I was so much more interesting in like working with tattoo artists than I was with like the AARP local newspapers. And I don't discount the importance of them. Don't, to be clear, local newspapers are as important as anything else in a communication strategy. But I believe that the power of organic human to human interconnected persuasion and doing so in the context that is comfortable and native to a person's universe is way more potent than a generic central news source. We were making bike spoke cards for the biking community. We were making knitting projects for the Altercockers. We were making food, ways that chefs could participate in the conversation. People could engage in a way that was culturally relevant and a place where they were in a pursuit of their own passion. And if you could connect who they were with what they liked doing and how they looked at the world, that the message was so much more potent. And at that moment, when I waved goodbye to them and I turned down a job to work on a presidential campaign, I immediately knew that my light world had taken a right turn and it was the beginning of a new stage for me. I think I'm somebody who believes in, if you want to see God laugh, tell me plans is, it should be a bumper. If I had a car with a bumper sticker, that's one of them. I'm somebody who rolls with the universe. And my life has been a series of hard, sharp turns. I like to say that if I would have gotten everything that I would have planned for, I would have sold myself short. Because the universe has pointed me in totally different direction than I expected to go and had planned to go and affirmed my path over and over again.
When we asked our Goodniks if there were signs from the universe that they were on the right path, we heard stories that affirmed that they are where they're supposed to be. Max is a co-founder of a center in New Orleans that's redefining recycling.
Oh my gosh. So many signs from the universe. I mean, I'll say from day one. So we launched this GoFundMe where we were trying to raise, I think, $5,000, which at the time we're like, wow, this is like super lofty goal. We'd prepared for like a week or so, getting the emails ready, getting the text ready to send to everyone, and we blasted it out. We're so excited. And 48 hours in, three people had donated. One was me anonymously, and one was my mom. And, at that point, we're like, oh my gosh, I guess it was just us. And maybe we were a little loopy for thinking that we could raise thousands of dollars to try and tackle an issue like this. And as the universe works, later that I remember talking to my mom and saying, I can't believe it's just us, yada, yada. And came home to see an article written about us in The Gambit or Advocate, which is big news outlet in New Orleans. And I got in front of so many new eyes, so many local eyes. And it wasn't at that point a friends of friends. It was the New Orleans community. And from that point on, it just, spiraled out of control. The fundraiser raised, tons of money, comparatively speaking, to what we had originally anticipated and tried to raise. And we got to see firsthand, too, just that buy-in from the community and how many folks were so desperate and so eager for a solution. I would say that was one very clear sign from the universe. even a couple weeks later, if that, maybe 2 weeks later, this machine that we crush glass on, the first machine we ever had, it's made by a company called Bottle Crushers US. And they, at the time, it was coming from New Zealand. Now they come from the US, but at the time it was coming from New Zealand, and you know, just how shipping takes, it was going to be like several weeks until we got a machine. And we're like, and all the while glass is piling up, you know, that front yard is filling up with glass, the neighbors are getting a little iffy about it. We knew we needed to make some move. And again, the way that the universe works, someone from Opelousas, Louisiana, which is 2 hours away, a fella who runs a spice company, actually the company that one of the sauces folks know them from, but they make Slap Your Mama's hot sauce, which is like one of these. Anyways, we in Opelousas, Louisiana, there was a guy who had this machine. He just bought it for fun, had it shipped from New Zealand a couple of years ago. And he's like, hey, I don't really use this. Do y'all want it? Like, yes, we are on the way, sir. And drove out to Opelousas, got that machine. We still have it today, where we crushed probably 50,000 bottles on it. At the time we didn't have any like employees, any staff. So we were just begging all of our college friends, anyone we knew. We're like, hey, can you come to this backyard and crush some glass? We really need some help. And it all went through that machine from, again, some random person at the time who reached out and had this obscure glass to sand crushing machine. I think there are so many signs from the universe. The flip side of that coin is a lot of long, long nights sometimes, especially at first. I mean, doing some truly backbreaking stuff all the while you're watching. At least for me, it was like my friends landing jobs in New York or San Francisco, making crazy amounts of money. And it's like, what am I doing here? So all that to say, receiving those signs from the universe sometimes make all the difference.
Tanara is a disruptor who battles inequity wherever she finds it.
Yeah, I think one of the signs has just been that I don't know by what magical thing that's looking over me is the more vocal and disruptive I am in my career, the better I do, the more successful I am. I think that's helped. It doesn't mean I haven't gotten my hand slapped and I haven't been told to go sit in the corner, but it's opened up more opportunities. The fact that I'm willing to be vocal about something, advocating for myself or for others, or taking on big challenges that other people are afraid of, has created a space where I think have a pretty good reputation for being a problem solver, not just a problem creator. I'm not just somebody who points out problems and is like, that sucks, that's terrible. My version of, you know, being a disruptor is, hey, that doesn't look like it's working. Here are some ideas. Can we? And I think the more I do that and the more open I am to doing that, it's done. The signs start to be that thing over there. Like that thing over there is like, it's like the hum is enough that I can hear it. And I know that I need to go and look at it and address it and figure out whether or not it's something that can be done. And so it's this pull. There's just always this pull. But I think I've been really fortunate in that the more I do that and the more honest I am about it, the better I've done in my life. Maybe the happier I am too. That's not always true. Sometimes these fights are terrible and you want to run away from them. But generally, the happier I am, because I can put my energy into something that is about making things better for somebody else. And I find a little bit of myself along the way. So I think also those things that tug on my own identity or my own questions about myself are probably other signs.
Chris is a teacher, principal, and founder of award-winning magnet schools in Philadelphia.
When I was applying to graduate school, my mother She's teaching sixth graders English in New Jersey. And she made me go teach a lesson in her classroom before she would give me her blessing to go be a teacher. And I taught the class and the kids were like, oh my God, there's two of them, you know, like, and so that was the really fun thing. And from that moment on, she was like, yeah, you've got this. You can go do this.
I had proved to my mom that I could do it. I think my parents would have liked that I would make, I mean, you know, that I made more money. So my parents were like, what? Like, can't you go make a fortune first and then become a teacher? And I was like, no. And I would kind of say to them, like, you did this. Like, need I remind you of how you raised me? And they were like, yeah, we didn't think you'd listen, you know, but I did. I think there were a lot of people who didn't think the school would succeed. I think there were a lot of people who were against the idea of the school. Like, when I got the job, a friend, the father of someone I taught in New York City, actually, he'd become a friend, called me up. He was a professor of education at one of the universities in New York. And he was from Philly originally. And he called me up and he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, come on, man. Like, you know, I'm from Philly. Like, you know, I grew up around Philly. Like, you know, I went to school in Philly. Of course I'm going to go back and do this. And he said to me, he's like, Chris, public education in Philadelphia is a dead experiment. Why are you doing this? And so there was a lot of like, Philly can't do this. There was a lot of like, people who didn't think we could do what we did. There were a lot of people who were like, your little school, like this little boutique school that you're forming, like whatever, it's not, you don't matter. And I remember being at a meeting of all the principals saying like, guys, we have to evolve. Like if you keep trying to do things the way you've always done them, these charter schools are going to eat your lunch. Like they're going to come for you. You don't get this. And one of the longest standing principals in the city at that point looked at me and she said, you listen to me, baby boy. We were here before you and we'll be here after you. And there was a lot of that. Now, the funny thing is, fast forward, I am now the most building senior principal in Philadelphia. No one has been at their school longer than me now. So she was there before me. She won't be there after me.
This is one of my favorite episodes because, like many of our good Knicks, I believe in signs from the universe, especially when they affirm that the direction I'm going is the right one. We aren't unique. The human brain is wired to look for patterns. Ever notice that once you are aware of something like a name or a number or a brand, that you see it everywhere? Psychologists might call these signs of synchronicity, when events, actions, or connections are infused with meaning. If you've been with us since the beginning of our Good Knicks journey, you already know that doing good is not as easy as it seems. That often it is filled with backbreaking work and heartbreaking moments that can test someone's will or even purpose. That's why signs from the universe are so important. At that very moment of doubt, getting what you need at just the right time, whether that be an obscure glass to sand crushing machine or a phone call asking you to do something you've never done, has to be more than a coincidence. The universe is always sending us signs and messages. We just have to listen. The first message, keep going. You're on the right track. In our next episode, we ask our good Knicks about what happens when they finish their current good work in the world. Who would they be if the problem they were working to solve magically went away? Thank you for being part of Good Knicks. Good Knicks was created and executive produced by Jeff Leitner, produced by Amanda Roscoe Mayo, with original music by Adam Ohlendorf. I'm your host, Annalisa Enrile. Good Knicks is supported by the Jim Joseph Foundation and inspired by every one of you who is doing good in the world. To learn more about Good Knicks, visit goodknicks.org. That's GoodNicks.org. Or follow us on Twitter at the Good Knicks, and on Instagram at the_GoodKnicks.